Time now to scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Obituaries are a feature of the daily newspaper. We'll ask funeral director Steve Presley how they get there. Then we'll get to the Writer's Almanac on Scribble. It is interesting that the consistent feature in newspapers is always the obituaries. As a matter of fact, I think it was WHBF Radio, renowned as a news source, but it built its audience because it was the only station that included obituaries in its newscasts.
Well, I do a lot of my work and occasionally read for the blind in the APRIS office. And the one thing that if a reader leaves out the obituaries, within 2 minutes you'll get a call. Mm-hmm. You didn't do the obituaries. I mean, they are, and the funeral notices, they are that important. Anything else you could skip. You could skip features or sports or anything. But boy, if you skip the obituaries, you get a call then and there.
Now, you're at the crossroads of that process, Steve. How responsible are you for obituaries?
Well, basically, they come from us to the newspaper. So we're right at the top of the mountain there. It's our responsibility to get it to the obituary desks.
Who gathers the information? Who does the writing? How does it all happen?
It can happen either in several ways. Many times we craft the obituary as we sit with the family. Those can be done very simply, just a news piece only, and then the family may embellish them a little bit. Or sometimes the family actually will write the obituary, submit it to us to make sure funeral times and visitation times are in, and then we forward it on to the newspaper obit desks.
But now that is an interesting process because I believe now they charge for obituaries, don't they?
Right. Almost every paper in the country, even some of the small rural areas now charge for obituaries because, as Roald mentioned, it is the feature, the one part of the paper that everybody looks at. And so it can be some families try to control the cost of the obituary. Some people don't care. So it can be quite involved.
Uh-huh.
And then deadlines are changing every day.
I have just some technical questions. Does there have to be in the newspaper a death notice or a funeral notice?
No, there doesn't. And sometimes there isn't.
Because a former student of mine died and there was nothing. And I thought there had to be an official notice, but there doesn't.
There doesn't. And you'd be surprised how many times a year a family chooses not to put something in the newspaper.
Well, of course, we wouldn't know that. I mean, that's frequent?
It happens more than you can imagine.
Huh.
Sometimes you may have one a month. Sometimes you may have a couple a month. You may go 2 or 3 months and not have a family who chooses not to put something in the
paper. Why would they want that?
Privacy.
Well, you know, there's a little list up there, deaths and burials, where they just list names. Are some not even listed there?
That's correct. Some aren't even listed in the list of deaths.
How do you, I would think, you know, we talk about the government being organized and handling everything, coroners and such, you would think that there would somehow be an official way of doing that, that if someone dies, it becomes a public notice. But that's not the case, huh?
Well, you must have to, as a funeral director, notify somebody.
Well, certainly. I mean, there's a death certificate that's filed,
okay. Which
is a legal document, which is filed with the state of Illinois when everyone dies.
Right.
So that is the official notification, the legal notification that's required to be made. But there's nothing that, no statute that requires a family or a funeral home to publish a death.
Does the newspaper get its information only from funeral homes?
Occasionally, they'll get that information from a family. But the newspaper will not print it unless they can confirm with a funeral home that that death occurs. So, for instance, a family member dies out of town. They're not residents here. They're residents in California. Yeah, but they, because of their long-time residency here, or the fact they were originally from this area, they choose to put an obit here. So the family will call, say, the Argus Dispatch, and say, Dad died in California, and we want to run an obituary. And the paper will say, that's well and good, but we need to confirm it since you're not a funeral home. So please give us the name of the funeral home you used in California so we can call and verify that that death actually occurred.
Now, what interests me is that how many years ago? Well, I've been alive since the Middle Ages, but I had a young former student who went to work at the newspaper, and his first job was to write obituaries. Now, was that a shift from newspapers to funeral homes, or what?
Well, it's interesting. I tongue-in-cheek say that the newspaper now charges for the obituary, but it's the funeral director that does all the work because they don't write it anymore. Sometimes they don't even edit it. They may look through and see if they find a few typos. But basically, we scan and email the photo. We gather the information. If the family chooses for us to do it, and then we email it to them, all they do is text set it, and it's set on the page by them. So basically, it all originates from the funeral homes.
Well, when did that transition occur? Because I know newspapers used to handle that.
Oh, you're right. I suppose it was whenever they started to charge. So, goodness, it may have even been 15 years ago now. But you're right, Don, and you mentioned WHBF, and we'd call Elsie in with the with the death notices. I'm old enough. I'm not quite to the ancient days, but very near. And then you would call Vera Green, for instance, at the Argus Dispatch or at the Rock Island Argus, and you would read the obituary to them. And there was no area for embellishment. It was strictly the facts and only the facts. And as you dictated, Vera would type, and they were 99.9% accurate, in those days. And so in a sense, they really did do all the work in those days, and the obituaries were free. And if you needed information, it was very easy to call and say, could you look this person up in the library and see if you have any information? And today, a lot of those library files are non-existent at the newspaper. So there's a period of time you would have to confirm this with the dispatch, but when the dispatch bought the Argus, a lot of those files, the old Argus files, disappeared. And the other sad thing is that because of time and change, you call the newspaper today, and unless it's somebody that appears in the paper every day because they're in politics or leader of some charity, the papers don't know these people. You know, it used to be everybody knew everybody in the Quad Cities, and that's not the case anymore. And so I think that's another reason why it's fallen on the funeral homes to play a major part in writing the obituary.
That's interesting. I was aware that a transition had occurred, but I didn't know when or how or what dictated it. It's just the way the world changes around you. You don't see it.
Well, and with the Argus Dispatch not publishing now their own paper, they outsource it to a group in Cedar Rapids. It means deadlines keep getting earlier. Our deadline now for the next morning is 3 in the afternoon. And sometimes you're going into a weekend and a death may have occurred late in the morning or early in the afternoon, and the family is anxious to get something in the paper the next day. there's no time to get it in. 3 o'clock is 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
And that's why you find in some days news is much different from paper to paper.
That's true. That's absolutely true. Generally, you see something in one paper, and the next day it's in the other, and there's no precedence. It goes back and forth.
Exactly. Yeah. So I used to have a lot more hair, and I say now that it's because I'm pulling it out. When I know we need to get an obituary in by deadline, and there's some tie-up, either the family's looking for a piece of information they can't find, or just because of the nature of the person's passing, it's hard to get them in, and they want something in the paper, but we've got deadline to worry about.
What happens in your shop? Who does what? Is it spread around, or is there a certain person?
Well, there's actually 7 funeral directors in our staff, including me, and each funeral director who meets with the family is responsible for that obituary. And so you lose something if you were to gather the information and to handle it, hand it off to a third person, I think, to write it. I mean, for me, it's nuances. Sometimes I'll include something in an obit that I didn't write down, but there was something in a comment a family made that I think was important to include in an obituary. You just have to be careful not to make any judgments sometimes.
Yeah, you can't remind somebody that he was known as the town drunk. I mean, but does the family then okay the obituary?
I guess that's the one nice thing about obituaries and computers, that either they sit right there while we do it, and we leave the office and go to our computer and prepare the obituary and then bring it down for them to proof before it goes. Or if they're on a time schedule, we email them a copy and try to get them to proof it before it goes into the paper.
Are there things that they might suggest that you advise them not to do? I mean, not tell them not to do, but say, well, that's probably not a good idea. I mean, I've read some interesting ones, and I wonder how did that, you know,
how did that get in there?
The last line of one that I remember, this was about 5 years ago. She was loved by 95% of the people she ever met, and the rest of you know who you are.
I don't think that was ours, but I wish I could take credit for that. That's very, you know, I guess I've never really had to tell a family, you know, I don't know that that would be the best thing to include in the newspaper. Sometimes, though, if...
But do you ever tell them that this is pretty long?
Will say to them, we might be at the $300 or $400 range now.
Okay.
How do you feel about that?
Okay.
And most of the time, they know that, and they're willing to keep going until they decide that they've said all that needs to be said.
I've often thought that I should write my own obituary. I would know what I would have a fun time with it.
Well, I think, Don, if you do, Enrolled and I outlive you. We're going to take a look at it, maybe make some edits. Don't you think, Roll?
I think so. Well, I know a couple people who have done that.
Oh, really?
Written their own, and they were very clever. I mean, and...
I don't know if I could be clever, but I thought, I wonder what I could get in 2 inches.
Do you get people to write their own?
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Many, many, many times. Part of the pre-arrangement process, they'll leave a pre-written obituary, or they will have given to their family something that they want to have included in the obituary. So that's not uncommon. But it's interesting when you go, and I'm sure the two of you do this, I do it because I read the obits every day. Right. But when we're in different parts of the country, doesn't matter where we are or in a different country, as long as it's in English, I try to find an obit page, and I'll read it every day. I'll read the Chicago Tribune, and I don't know 99.9% of the people that are in that paper, but it's interesting to read obituaries. I mean, it's
how about the one in The Economist? The last page of that magazine is a feature on someone who has died that week. And that's some of the best writing that you'll find in the magazine. And it's, I don't know that you'd call it an obituary. It's an appreciation, sometimes a critique or a commentary, but it is fascinating always. Everybody who gets The Economist reads the last page, because it's the same way with the London Review of Books. Everyone reads the classifieds because of the racy nature of the personal ads.
Yeah, I have to remember that. You know, at one time, and I meant to look it up today before I left the office, but there was a time when we would place more obituaries, for instance, in the Chicago Tribune, which is now very, very pricey.
Right.
And but they've gotten bigger in a sense. They're not the little classifieds. Right. They're a little bit bigger, and now they're printing photos in them. But there used to be a feature editor that we could call, even from out here in the hinterlands, if we felt that there was somebody that should be a feature obituary in the Tribune. And actually got to know the guy. He was a real nice fella, and very seldom did we have anybody out here that that he would pick up on. But every once in a while, and he'd call back and thanks us for the heads up. And
This has been illuminating, because I really had no idea. I remember my former student telling me that you always started the newspaper writing obituaries.
Exactly.
And now it's obvious that that's not the case.
Well, I think they still do use a lot of young people, but they don't have the same responsibility that they they had years ago. And we've got good people on those desks. You know, I should mention that at one time they tried to do feature obits here, and I don't know if either of you remember that, but Bill Wundrum tried a couple years ago to feature an obit or two every week, and it was to be just the common folk, as he would probably put it, and Wundrum would call up and he said, "Presley, what can you tell me about this person that I see in the paper?" But nobody here does that any longer.
Mm-hmm.
What's the purpose of an obituary?
Well, I think see it as...
Or does that vary?
Oh, I think it varies. I think there's a couple universal reasons. You hit on one right off, Roald. I think one is obviously to announce the passing of someone. Secondly, I think it's to inform the public of when the services or gathering or whatever is going to be had to... memorialize that person. That would certainly, I think, be the big two. And then three, it becomes a part of the historical record, genealogy. And that's one thing I point out to families when they write their obituary themselves. Sometimes they leave a few what I consider important pieces out. I mean, I'm old, so I learned under what we used to call the AP wire service format. And that is that you put birth date, birthplace, father's name, mother's name, including the mother's maiden name, which all become a part of that historical record. I don't know how many times people are at newspapers or the Historical Society or even calling us to go back in our records that go back to 1889 trying to find a name. And so many times that's where they're found, in the obituary.
Well, thank you very much, Steve. This has been, as I say, quite illuminating. And I think I'll start working on mine pretty quick now, just to be sure you get the facts right. Steve Presley's been our guest, and right now it's going to be Garrison Keillor. Support for Writer's Almanac on WVIK comes from the Mississippi Valley Regional Blood Center, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Information at bloodcenter.org. And with that, after we've talked about obits and so on, let's go to the book bag and see if anything lively is there.
Well, I'm trying to suggest lively things. If you've been listening the past couple of weeks, you know that the kind of summer reading lists that places tend to suggest tend to be kind of pretty light and heavy on romance and mysteries and so forth and so on. And I thought summer would be a better time to get serious about something, the way you read one summer all of Dostoevsky, and I did the pretty much the same to D.H. Lawrence, and just got fascinated. And at the end of the summer, I had accomplished something, right? I had read this body of knowledge. Let me suggest, and this comes from a reader, a listener, who just told me that she thinks it's Barnes & Noble has gotten six authors, contemporary authors, to rewrite six Jane Austen novels to make them contemporary.
Why? That's ridiculous. I mean, I'm sorry.
Well, anyway, and I haven't seen them, and I'm not sure that's correct, but she said her daughter has the books for her when she comes out to visit, so apparently it is. Why you would need to rewrite Jane Austen? Well, you know, last year the Shakespeare Festival in Oregon got rewritten all of Shakespeare's plays.
Don't bring that up.
But there are, there have always been rewrites of famous books.
Mm-hmm.
Romeo and Juliet's been rewritten, right, as West Side Story and many other versions.
And has yet to be improved.
There are some books that to which this has been done that are really very interesting. And let me start with two of them, and then if we have more time, I'll give you some more. Sometime in the 1960s, just as the height of the criticism of Mark Twain, Mark Twain was, you know, until 1920 or so, regarded as the great American writer. Then there came all sorts of attacks on Mark Twain. Not a good writer, sold himself out, no good and all. And a critic named John Seeley, tongue-in-cheek, took all the criticisms of Huckleberry Finn and, Huckleberry, this isn't realistic, this couldn't have happened, this didn't happen, why didn't Jim just go over to Illinois, et cetera, and rewrote the book as The True Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. If you want a very interesting read, read Twain's Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, corrected as The True Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. It is the deadest, dullest book you can possibly imagine. And it says something about the way in which works get done. I mean, it is really a good read. And, John Gardner, the poet who taught at Southern Illinois, rewrote Beowulf from the monster's point of view, Grendel, right?
That's a great book.
And James Smiley did Lear out in the middle of Iowa in 1,000 acres, a farmer and his three daughters.
Fair.
Yeah. but there are some interesting attempts to do this.
Yeah, that's true. It's I remember John Gardner's Grendel. I read that book and was overwhelmed because every chapter seemed to express a different discipline, a different philosophy or something.
It's brilliant, yeah.
Yeah, it is absolutely brilliant. I recommended it to a book club, and they were confounded by it and asked me to come up and tell them why it was so good.
And it does no disservice to Beowulf.
Oh, no, not at all. But the Twain book does sound like
it. It is fun to read.
Okay, well, there's some fun things to do. But right now, we think the most fun thing would be for you to plan to be with us again next week. I'm Don Wooten with Roll Tweet. We'll be back then to talk a little bit more about the great subject of literature on Scribble.